You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today is Tuesday, and usually on Tuesdays we have our Dallas County Community College Board of Trustees meeting, and that will happen, which means I have to end the show in a little over an hour. Normally, I expected to really start this season Monday, but our sound engineer was sick, so the whole studio was closed, and he had to come in today. I think he's getting better, although I wasn't in when he came in, to power everything up. So we're back on the air at Richland College, and this is the 598th show. I had hoped to get to 600, so I fell a little short. But by the end of next year, we'll be over 800 shows, and sometime between now and the next 2 years, probably earlier than later, I hope to have a syndicated national show, which means I'll get paid for it as opposed to giving it free. The format will somewhat change, though. If you listen to these shows, you'll notice there are no commercials, so it's ad-free, and that's really nice because I listen to a lot of talk radio, and it's somewhat getting to me, the commercials. I really would like to listen to a show that's more or less commercial-free, but the price you pay when you want anything for free is ads. You got to listen to the advertisements, and after all, while they get repetitive, you've heard them, and that's what advertising is all about, repeating the same message over and over again to finally get your attention. Well, they've gotten my attention, and it becomes somewhat annoying, so I've learned to shut it down when a commercial comes on. You can't skip over it in radio, but you can stop. For example, what I'd normally do is read books while I'm listening to the radio. Radio is sort of the background, and if someone is making a point that's interesting, I'll stop reading. And then that gets me to what I was doing over the holidays is catching up in my reading. I am a reader. Most Americans are not readers, by the way. I know that. But some people just enjoy reading, and I'm one of those people, and I have literally hundreds of books. And I'm trying to work my way through those books, but it does take a little time. And on the holidays, I usually read some fiction, usually during the academic year, if you will, when classes are going on. I'm not reading fiction. But I decided to reread a book several books that I had read many, many years ago, because I knew they were very, very good. Fiction that I'm interested in is spy novels. And the classic one is, and he's written literally over a dozen books, John Le Carrier's book, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. And that's the first of a trilogy. And I've finished two, and I'm almost finished with the third. So I'm more or less through the book. It's a rather thick book. It's slightly less than 1,000 pages, but it's three separate books. They came out in the 70s, so it's many years ago. And I won't spoil the book, because I know a lot of people, maybe it's the first time they've heard the name. And for those that are new listeners, before I forget, the way you listen to the Pronk Pop Show is to go to my companion blog for the show, which is pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S.wordpress.com. And right below my photograph, you'll have links to the most recent, in this case, 60 shows, 60 to 80 shows. And below that, you'll get my notes for the show. And these are rather extensive. Usually I try to have a lot less than I do today, but and this very well might be a two-part show. So I'm alerting you, it depends how much material I can get through, because I'm trying to combine some news events with, again, what's happening in novels, as well as what's happening in the United States today. So if you go there, you'll get my notes for the show, which include cartoons, photographs, graphics, quotes, articles, YouTube videos, and I really have a ton of it because this is somewhat of a wide-ranging show. It's trying to really put in a much, much broader context what's going on in the world today. But getting back to the book I was reading, and it's really the first in the trilogy, and this was made into a television series as well as a movie. And if you go to YouTube, you can actually listen to the television series. And I encourage you to do it, because while the book is terrific, and I urge you first to read the book, because then you'll know the story. If you go to YouTube and watch it, well, you tend not to read it. So it's up to you. And I have another, my main blog is Pronk Palisades. And the way you get to that is just my name, RaymondThomasPronk.wordpress.com. You go there. Actually, I think it's Raymond Pronk. It's not the full name. And in my last post, I tracked down the videos as well as the book covers and some information on the author. Now, I don't want to spoil either the book or the video or the movie. You can actually, there was I think it was at least 10 years ago, but they also made it into a movie. And again, it's a trilogy, so there's three books. But what I'm going to focus on to really get into the topic I want today is the first part. And it's about the British Intelligence Agency, their equivalent of our CIA, MI6. And they use the word the circus in terms of where it's located. But that's all details. What is the essence of the story? Well, during the after the Communist Revolution, the Soviet Union began to spy on a number of nations, including Great Britain, as well as the United States and other countries. Now, all nations, especially large nations that can afford it, engage in espionage or spying. And one of the things they try to do is recruit citizens of other countries to betray their country by providing the intelligence service, whoever they work for, information as to what that country is doing. It's spying. Shorthand way to say it is it's simply spying. But the key is the person that agrees to do that, he is betraying his country, but he has a reason for doing it. Now, one of the reasons is money. Many spies throughout history have done it for money, and that's one principal motivation. That's probably the easiest to understand. However, you do have people that believe in the ideology of that nation. In this case, the Soviet Union was communism. And normally what they do, although this is not, there are different ways to recruit people, is they have what they call talent spotters, as well as recruiters, at colleges, looking for people that usually are very, very bright, probably will be successful, believe in this case, communism, and they recruit them to be spies, and they don't want them to be publicly known. It's a secret, okay? And the idea is, over time, these people will be in various government agencies, including the intelligence services, and will provide, in this case, the Soviet Union, information as to what the government is doing. Now, this book is about Great Britain, so it's about the British intelligence services, and they recruit people. And one of the persons that they recruited became the number two person in the British intelligence services. Now, what you need to understand as to background, a lot of this is reflecting what happened in Great Britain. There were spies in British intelligence. At the time, prior to that being known, there were also spies in the United States government, quite a few of them, quite frankly. So the Soviet Union tried to penetrate the governments abroad, and the two chief ones at the time were the United Kingdom and the United States. And they were betting, and they had the long view that over time, people initially recruited out of college would rise in the organization, and 10, 20, 30 years later would be in a position, a high position in power, but all during the years that they're in the service could pass information along. So that's the essence of it. The point I'm trying to make is all governments do this. Our government does it, the Soviet Union, now Russia does it, China does it. And like I said, all large countries with the resources will do this to the extent that they have the resources to do it. And it pays off. It works. And the motivation of the person agreeing to be a spy, why, many times it's money. I don't want to go over the cases, but we have caught, the United States government has caught, both FBI, CIA, as well as employees of other agencies spying for foreign governments, whether it's Russia, Communist China, former Soviet Union, and there also have been allies spying on us. In reality, one of the spies, and this is the real world, this is not the book, was working in Washington. Ultimately, he fled. That's Kim Philby. And he had risen fairly high in the British intelligence service. I don't want to confuse you with the numbers because there's MI5 and MI6. Think of MI6 as the intelligence services, MI5, I want to say the FBI, but they're similar to it. What I'm trying to say is think of it as the intelligence services. And the novel gets into the bureaucracy, the bureaucrats that run it. And one of the key characters is, and he's the good guy, is George Smiley, who ultimately finds out, tracks down, determines who the spy is. And that's about the extent I don't want to spoil either the book or the movie. But one of the key themes is trust and betrayal. And what happens when that betrayal becomes known and its impact on intelligence agency. And the fact that you have governments, in this case the Soviet Union, trying to get information as to what, first of all, Great Britain was doing, but through Great Britain determine what the United States was doing. And they were very, very successful at it, both in the book, the novel, as well as in real life. And I'm sure it's going on today, and that's one of the worst fears that any government has, is they have what's called a mole, someone that has penetrated an organization, usually the CIA, it could be the National Security Agency, it could be the FBI, it could be any government agency, but has access to information that would be of value to a foreign government, whoever that foreign government may be. And that goes on every day. And the greatest fear of those organizations is they are penetrated. They have someone that's working for them that they consider loyal, they trust, and over time, as that person moves up in the organization, has increased access to a lot of information, and is passing that information along to foreign governments, especially if they were recruited as an ideological recruit, in other words, someone that believes in the cause of communism, in this instance, or someone that's doing it for money. Now, they also recruit people that they can blackmail, and they try to, for example, entrap them, have pictures of them engaging in activity that they would not like to see in the papers. I think you get the idea. So they have some control over the spy. And like I say, this happens and is happening, and it's happened throughout history. It's not new. Spying is one of the oldest professions, and it involves trust, and it involves breaking that trust or betraying that trust to the enemies of the country that the person's working for. Now, what does that have to do with what's happening today in the news and the elections? Well, usually what I'm talking about is governments spying on governments. However, it somewhat has changed. We have people today that are very, very wealthy. And by very, very wealthy, they're billionaires. These are very wealthy individuals, both on the left, the right, and the center, in terms of their political philosophies. Now, many of these people support political candidates, both in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. They make campaign contributions. Usually, this is rather It's not spying in the sense they're not looking to get secret information. That's not what this is about. What they're trying to do is influence the laws, the regulations that our representatives in Congress pass. And it's described usually as the donor class. And I want to make very, very clear, they're making campaign contributions. That's perfectly legal. And under our Constitution, the First Amendment, and then we do have laws, though, that somewhat restrict the amounts, which I'm against, by the way, but that's another show. Normally, what's involved is the person wants something, wants a law passed, a regulation passed, wants a subsidy. It's more very much focused and very much narrow. But there's definitely a quid pro quo in the sense that the donor is making campaign contributions, which are legal, but it's understood, whoever he's making this campaign contribution to, that he would like certain things to happen. And that, like I said, could be the receipt of a subsidy, a loan guarantee, a change in the regulations, the enforcement or non-enforcement of laws. There's a whole range of things that people want. And they're not making these campaign contributions because they like you. They might like you, but that's not necessary. The key is they're trying to persuade with money. Some would call it bribery. I don't call it bribery, but it has that same effect, to get an outcome. And you need to understand something. I think it's perfectly legitimate for any business or charity or school that has something that the federal government can impact to get their point of view across. But the key thing here is, why are they doing it? They want something. Don't lose track of that. And to get access to that person, they're providing campaign contributions. Now, I'm not talking about people, individuals, that do make campaign contributions. I certainly have. I know my family has, friends have. That's perfectly legitimate. But we're not talking about tens or hundreds or even thousands of dollars. We're talking big money here. And the more money, you're going to get more access, and the more time they're going to listen to you and pay attention to you and solicit you for money. So you need to understand, anyone running a campaign, especially a presidential campaign, it's absolutely crucial that they have money. They can be the best speaker, have a great message, personality, but you need to get your message across. And you're starting to see, actually, I know in Texas, I'm sure in other states as well, political campaign ads. Those cost money, first just to produce them, research them, make sure they're effective, and then they have to buy time on television networks as well as radio networks to broadcast those campaign ads. All of this requires money, actually quite a bit of money. I've heard estimates that today, if you want to run for president, it'll cost you upwards of $1 billion, which is $1,000 million. So you're not getting that kind of money from small donors or people that are sending in checks for $5, $25, $100, $500, even $5,000. That's not what I'm talking about. I want to make that very, very clear. What I'm talking about is the owners and the executives of large corporations making campaign contributions in the hundreds of thousands of dollars to the parties, political parties, as well as the candidate, and there are limits on that. But what they also do is make a lot of campaign, actually they're not campaign contributions, they're charitable deductions to a number of organizations, foundations, colleges, think tanks. There's a long list. There's a network. You have them on the left, you have them on the right, and you have them on the center. So it's widespread. But your average voter simply is not aware of that. They're ignorant of it. They're not stupid. They're just ignorant of it. They have lives to lead, jobs to go to, schoolwork to do. So they're not really aware of the big picture as to what's going on. But it's going on. And what I'm leading up to is, who is one of the biggest? He's certainly one of the wealthiest persons that's doing this. Now, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I am talking about a name that you may or may not have heard of, George Soros. And if you go to procpops.wordpress.com, you'll have a lot of information on him, both YouTube videos, articles, as well as graphics. He gives to literally hundreds of organizations. He is definitely of the left. I think it would be fair to describe him as a socialist. In the United States, probably described as a progressive. And he gives money through various of his foundations to other foundations. It's sort of like money laundering, so you don't know exactly where the money came from. But it's clear that George Soros has an agenda, and he's looking for politicians that will support that agenda. Yes, he gives to their campaigns, but what is he trying to do? He's trying to buy politicians, have an impact. He wants an impact, and that's what you need to understand. And one way he can have an impact is by his money, as well as where his money goes and to what these organizations do. Nothing is illegal here, and that's the point I want to make. Nothing is illegal. He can do this. And he does it, and he's doing it right now. And the people that work for him are doing it right now. But they have an agenda, folks, an agenda. And he expects the politicians that he support agree with his agenda. He makes sure they agree with his agenda before he gives them money, even though his net worth is significantly greater than Donald Trump's. As a matter of fact, at one time, my understanding is he actually invested some money with Donald Trump in a building he was constructing, a project in Chicago. Now, I'm not going to get into that, but that's just a detail. So this gentleman is very, very wealthy. He can afford it. He's given hundreds of millions of dollars away. And he's not just doing it in the United States. He does it in other countries. He's trying to, in effect, overthrow the governments, or the administrations, however you want to say it, of countries that have a philosophy that it disagrees with his, which in my mind, in terms of the United States, is free market capitalism. He wants socialism in the United States, but that's a rather general term. What you see is what we're seeing today in the news. What's the leading news story today? Well, it's Barack Obama, President Obama, the lame duck president, the irrelevant president, the big F, the big failure, is in the news. He's issued executive orders. What is an executive order? It's an order to people in his administration as to what he would like to see happen. And if you've listened to the show, you know what he wants to do is, if he could, he can't do it, but if he could, he'd like to repeal the Second Amendment that gives you and me the right to keep and bear arms. And that is his ultimate objective. And he's very frustrated about it because he's not going to succeed. Now, why would he do that? Let's look at history. Wherever you have a tyranny, a dictatorship, what is the first thing the tyrants or the dictators want to do? They don't like opposition. They're trying to suppress dissent or political opposition. But what they're scared of is people that have weapons. So one of the first things the communists do, as well as the National Socialists, the Nazis, and any dictator, regime, does is go after people's guns. They don't want you and me to have guns. They are scared of guns. They're not shaking in their boots, but they would like you not to have your guns. And let me remind you, the reason why we had the American Revolution was we had a tyrant in the King of England, George. And we issued a Declaration of Independence, ultimately revolted, and let me remind you, the Founding Fathers were engaged in treason. If they were caught, as they would be hanged and quartered, killed by the King of England through his troops that he sent over here. And it was a minority of the colonists that were revolting, actually a small percentage. So the people that wrote the Declaration of Independence knew that if they failed, if their revolution failed, they would hang, either together or separately. And some of them did. And many lost their lives or the lives of their loved ones and their property. It's very risky to be a revolutionary when you're dealing with the most powerful army at the time, namely the British Army, the Redcoats. They were traitors to the King of England. And what they wanted to do was set up a representative republic with a constitution, and they did. They were successful. Surprised everybody. And again, they were a small minority. And that's something to keep in mind. You don't have to have the majority behind you to overthrow what you consider a repressive regime or laws imposed upon you from Great Britain. But that they were successful. Thank goodness. Or today, you would be a citizen of Great Britain or part of the British Empire. But the point I'm trying to make is, there's a price to pay if you're unsuccessful. There's a price to pay if you're caught. And what some people in this country would like to have is a single-party government that is so-called progressive or socialist, I don't care which term you prefer, but they identify themselves, many identify themselves as progressives, such as Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. One of the other candidates for president, Bernie Sanders, admits he's a socialist. As far as I'm concerned, they are of the left. They are of the far left. And they don't like the fact that under the United States Constitution, namely the Second Amendment, to the U.S. Constitution, part of the Bill of Rights is the fact that the American people have the right to bear arms, keep and bear arms. So what's happening today, Barack Obama is proposing through executive order to close the so-called loophole. And I have information on it because most people are just not. I thought I posted it. I'm sure I did. Yes, I did. I did post it. I have the, I went to Wikipedia to just get a so you have a summary, so you have more information. And this is not a show about necessarily guns, but it's to make a point here. This is a so-called gun show loophole. Well, first of all, there's no loophole here. If you're a licensed arms dealer, federal firearms license, if you're a dealer, you have to do a background check, whether it's in your own gun store or at a gun show. That's required by law. And it goes on every day. And if you go to a gun show, I haven't, but I've talked to people that have. Most of the people there, not all of them, but most, the majority of the people there are what? They're licensed, federally licensed firearms, and they have to do a background check, and they do. They call it in from the gun show. You remember, we have cell phones today. So there's no loophole, but what are we talking about? There are people that go to gun shows. Some of them can be collectors, and many of them are, but they're not in the business of selling guns in the sense that they don't own or operate a gun store. So they might have some weapons, not a lot, but some. So they go to gun shows, show their collections, show what they have available, and will sell one or more of those weapons. That's the so-called loophole they're talking about. See, what I want to emphasize is, the goal of Barack Obama and the people on the left is to take your guns. They're gun grabbers. That's ultimately what they want to do. And they're trying to make the case, and I don't think they make the case at all, that the problem today is some people are not subject to a background check. And ultimately what they want to do is, if let's say I owned a gun and I want to sell it. I not in the business, it could be selling, most likely selling it to a friend, would have to get a background check. Well, that Congress has said, no. That's violating the Second Amendment, and it is. The point I'm trying to make, and what people on my side of the argument say, first, we have the Second Amendment. Two, we already have these background checks, and they don't stop the violence that we have going on today. Why not? Because most of the people using weapons illegally are criminals. And they don't buy them at guns. They don't buy them at gun shows. They don't buy them in gun stores. They either steal them or buy them from other criminals. And they don't really care about what the law is. They don't care about the regulations. And many of them, because they are criminals, know they couldn't pass a background check. Ladies and gentlemen, what's going on in the United States, crime is down, way down. Violent crimes are down. The problem is, and what the president does not want to discuss, is over half the violent crimes, the murders, the homicides in this country are blacks killing other blacks. That is the problem that he's not dealing with. Because these gun laws, these background investigations, don't stop criminals from killing others, and many of them are blacks. It's black on black crime that's a major issue here. I'm sorry, Mr. President, but that's just the facts. Go to the FBI and look at their own statistics. The general trend is, though, crime is down. Over half the homicides are black on black killing each other, primarily in black neighborhoods. It's gun and drug related violence. And probably the city most representative of that today is Chicago. Never talks about Chicago. He's from Chicago, but doesn't want to talk about Chicago. They have very strict gun laws, and the problem is the criminals don't care about it. They don't. They're criminals. They don't care about the law. If I'm going to kill somebody or have killed somebody, you think I care about a gun law or background check? So what the president is doing is wasting a lot of people's time. I debated even whether I should cover this, but it illustrates a key point here. And I fall in this trap, and a lot of people fall in this trap. Barack Obama is not, I'll underline that, an independent agent. What do I mean by that? He's a bought and paid for a politician. He has been corrupted. He's a corrupt politician. And he has a lot of company, both in the Democratic and Republican parties. He didn't have the money to run for president. He didn't have the money to run for senator. And he knew it. So he had to call attention to himself. And what he stood for, and get the support of one or more people in what's called the donor class, the people that are very wealthy, the owners and executives of businesses. And we're talking multi-millionaires, billionaires. We're not talking the average contributor, because you need a lot of money to run for public office today. Because even if you're the most brilliant, principled, person of integrity, a nice guy, charming, people need to hear your message. And that means you have to be on television, you have to be on the radio, and you also have to send people information. And all that costs a lot of money. And the people that provide that money are expecting something in exchange. They don't do it for free. And that includes George Soros. He wants his socialist progressive agenda implemented in the United States as well as other countries. That's what he's about. He is a very successful investor. And I'm not going to get into that, but he is. He's written several books. He speaks. He's not hiding what he's about. He's also, according to a number of people, very thin-skinned. He doesn't like to be criticized. He doesn't like to hear what I'm going to say on the show today. So he wants to back politicians that will change or transform this republic, this representative republic under the United States Constitution, into a single party. And that single party will be a socialist party that will accomplish certain things. One of them will be the elimination of the Second Amendment. Remember, that's what all the socialists, the communists, the tyrants want. They want to eliminate any possibility that law-abiding citizens have weapons. You see, the reason why we have the Second Amendment is not so you can go hunting. It's not really to protect your families. Well, that's probably the primary reason many people today buy firearms, is to protect their property and their families from criminals breaking into their homes or businesses. The reason why we have a Second Amendment is to protect us against tyrants. And the founders knew what they were talking about. They had risked their lives to establish the United States of America. And they knew that the ultimate check, if the United States Constitution were not betrayed, against a tyranny is the fact that our citizens are well-armed, and they are. The problem is Barack Obama, as well as Hillary Clinton, and many Democrats would, if they could, get rid of the Second Amendment. They know they can't. But to continue to get support from their donors, including George Soros, and they know they cannot get this passed Congress, because that's why he's issuing an executive order. And the next president can rescind it. It doesn't have a force of law, and it will be fought by the states as well as individuals and other organizations. But they know they have to keep their big donors happy. They have to keep them smiling. And I have a nice picture of Barack Obama with his arms around George Soros, and they both have big smiles on their faces. Of course they do. Because who's been president and is still president today? Yes, Barack Obama. So I'm using the news story to make the point that this is just one small part of the progressive or socialist agenda of George Soros. But it's not just George Soros. And that's the even bigger point. There's a whole network of people that want to do this. Now, you might ask me how many people or what percentage of the population do I think there are? Well, my rough guess would be somewhere between 10 and 20%. They're not the majority of the American people. They are certainly not the majority of the American people, because they know that the American people will never knowingly adopt socialism. And that's a direct quote from Norman Thomas. Yes, another socialist. He was a six-time presidential candidate for the Socialist Party in America. They won't vote for socialism, but they will vote and support legislation, bills, that are in fact taking us down the road to socialism and serfdom. And that's what Barack Obama is trying to do. Remember, Obamacare was not supported by the majority of the American people. Not a single Republican voted for it. And Barack Obama knows, the Democratic Party knows, that if the Republicans elect a Republican president and still control the House and the Senate, one of the first things they're going to do is repeal Obamacare. They will definitely repeal this executive order, and they will definitely repeal his attempt to get around immigration law. You see, what we have in the White House today is a tyrant. He's acting like a tyrant. If you want the law changed, you go to Congress and you get it changed. He knows he can't do it. He's very frustrated, very frustrated. He knows he's a lame duck. He knows people have caught on to his act. He knows the American people know they've been betrayed by him. He's a failure. He's a disaster. The American people know it. That's why in poll after poll, the American people have said, we believe this country is going in the wrong direction. They're right. It is going in the wrong direction. Far left, progressive, socialist, left direction. And they don't like it. They don't want it. They don't like it. They've been lied to. And their biggest supporters are the media that supported Barack Obama and are now supporting Hillary Clinton. The big lie or lies take the form of propaganda that you hear every day. Our schools, especially K through 12, not all of them, but many of them are failing. I ran across a statistic. I haven't been able to track it down, but I've heard similar information. That about at eighth grade, this is at eighth grade, 70% of American students are not reading at the level of an eighth grader. That should get your attention. But it goes on, and they most likely never will. That really gets your attention. That's a big failure. So-called public schools are really government-run schools, and they're failing. They're failing miserably, yet the United States government, both federal and education, is mostly local, folks. Oh, yeah, we have a Department of Education. That should be abolished. But education is funded at the local level, and today it's a failure. And it's continuing to happen at junior colleges and so-called senior universities. The problem is we're passing people through public schools, and when they get out, they can't read. Or if they can read, they're not reading at the level they should be. Which means when they try to go to, for example, a community college such as Richland College or any of the Dallas community colleges, they apply, they get admitted because they are a high school graduate. And then they quickly find out, they know this, if you're trying to get through. Today in America, you need to complete, I'm giving you a round number, 42, 43, 3-credit or 4-credit hour courses. That's a 4-year college education. Let's break it down. A one course today, 3-credit hour course, usually lasts 15 or 16 weeks. One of those weeks are exams, midterm final exams. So the typical student has to read at least 15 chapters of a book in a course. Now, sometimes that could be 30 chapters. You have to read 2 chapters a week. The point I'm trying to make, you're going to have to read typically anywhere from 30 to 50 pages per course per week. So if you're taking the standard load, a full load of 5 courses, that's 15 credit hours or 16 credit hours. Could be a little bit more, but usually that's the typical course load. That means every week you have to read a minimum of 150 pages, a maximum of maybe 300 pages every week. That's a book. As I was walking in the studio, I was talking to the faculty advisor for student media. And she asked me, what'd you do over the week, over your holiday? I said, well, I caught up on my reading and jokingly said, well, I have about several thousand books, so I'm really trying to go through them as quick as possible. And I'll use that figure on another show on the National Security Agency, but I'm digressing. The point I'm trying to make is it's absolutely essential that you be able to read at a college level, which means 12th grade or higher. Because if you want to succeed and complete your college education and get anything out of it, you got to do the homework. And that means you got to read more or less a book a week. Now, that's not impossible, folks. Not at all. Remember, there's 7 days in a week. So you typically have to read 20 to 30 pages a day. If you know how to read, that's a couple of hours. I'm not talking to be an A student. I'm just talking to pass. But what if you can't read or you're not at a college level? Let's say you're at 8th grade level or 10th grade level. You're going to have trouble. You're going to have big trouble. You know, when I read, and I'm always reading, I have right next to me a dictionary thesaurus, a very good one. And I have a very, very good vocabulary. But depending on what I'm reading, I know I'm going to run across words that I don't know the meaning of, so I'm looking them up. Even this nonfiction book, I must have turned to the dictionary at least a dozen times, and there were words that I should have known. And I have a very good vocabulary and read a lot. Imagine someone that doesn't like reading because they don't do it well or they can't read at all going to college. That is what we're doing today. We're wasting money on people, taxpayer money, hard-earned money, subsidizing people that can't read. They shouldn't be in college. You said they shouldn't be in college. You don't think they should have? I agree they should have a chance, but after 12 years of taxpayer-funded education, you can't read at the 12th grade level? And I'm not exaggerating, folks. I have talked to instructors that have so-called development courses. Go to any community college today. A lot of people are taking so-called developmental courses. This is remedial courses to help the people that can't read, can't do basic math. And the instructors will tell you it's a lost cause. There are a few people in there that maybe it helps. Usually people that English is their second language. But most people, if through 12 years you can't read, a 16-week course is not going to correct that situation. Reading is a prerequisite of getting through college. If you can't read or you're reading at a level way below where you should, your chances of completing a four-year degree are slim and none. I'm not saying some people don't slip through the crack. They do. Yes, they do. And that's the problem. I use this as an example of what happens when governments run things. They screw them up. There's not accountability, and there isn't. If there were accountability, everyone that graduates from high school today would be able to read at the 12th grade level, and they don't. That's why if you compare our scores, there's an outfit, I forget, but every 2 years they do these surveys across nations of where the United States, how do they compare with other nations in terms of, for example, their reading, their knowledge of science, math, and we do very poorly. We're proud of it, but we do very poorly. So what do we have? We have the so-called donor class that supports political parties as well as candidates, as well as an institutional infrastructure, if you will, of think tanks, colleges, charitable organizations, issue-oriented organizations. They provide them with the financial resources they need to hopefully achieve whatever their objectives are. All of this is perfectly legal. I keep emphasizing that for a reason. But you need to understand that. Most people don't. And what George Soros is trying to do is turn this country into a single-party socialist government or progressive government. I don't care how you want to describe it. It's far left. You want to say Marxists or Leninists or communists, however you want to describe yourself. But that's what they're about. And there are a number of issues that they focus in on. And one of them is trying to grab your guns. Another in the news, or was in the news in December, was the so-called Treaty on Climate Change, which is a joke. You see, the executive order that Obama is instructing the various departments, the FBI, the Bureau of Firearms, Tobacco, they've changed their name, but the Justice Department, what they're trying to do isn't going to mean a hill of beans. It's never going to get through Congress. It's never really going to be enforced. The American people are not going to stand for it. Every year Obama has been president, what has gone up, up, and up? Sales of firearms and ammunition. He's been the greatest thing for gun store owners and the manufacturer of weapons. That's the irony. That's the unintended consequence of Barack Obama. American people are wide awake on this one. You're not going to get our guns, and we're going to fight you every single inch of the way. And any time you try to limit or infringe upon our Second Amendment right, we're going to fight you. And that's what, and none of what President Obama is trying to get through will become law
And it's not going to stop the gun violence, because most of the violence, not all, who's doing this violence? Usually it's criminals or the mentally ill. Criminals, typically, although we have some very stupid criminals, don't go in the gun stores and buy weapons. No, they steal them or they buy them from other criminals. And where you have the tightest gun laws, such as Chicago, where you, in essence, what you're doing is making harder and harder for people to defend themselves and their families, that's where you have the murders. So they want to say guns are the problem. That's why they call it gun control. It's not gun control. What we don't have is criminal control. We need criminal control. And who are the criminals? Especially the most violent criminals? They happen to be blacks. They happen to be drug dealers. And who are they killing? Other blacks. That's what the media does not want to talk about. In other words, we'll make, this is a distraction, folks. But Obama is emphasizing this because he's bought and paid for. And this is what George Soros and the people that support George Soros is about want. They also want to undermine the free market capitalist system. And to do that, they're going after energy. They want to regulate not only guns, they want to regulate your energy. And in essence, what they want to do is increase the cost to you and me of electricity and gasoline. They're not for the American workers, the point I'm trying to make here. They are squeezing the American worker. And they do this. If they could, they would pass a carbon tax. Can't get that through Congress either. So they try to do it through EPA, Environmental Protection Agency regulations. And it's going to be challenged in court by the states. And that frustrates the hell out of President Obama. He can't get his way. See, the dictator, the tyrant, our president can't get his way, and he's going nuts. And the clock is ticking. Tick, 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 tick. He has a little over 12 months, and he hasn't accomplished much. And the extent that he's accomplished anything, it's been a failure. And if a Republican should be elected president, his entire legacy goes down the toilet where it should be in and flushed. It is dawning on him that he'll never admit it to himself, that he is a big failure, a zero. That's why he's desperate, as well as George Soros, to get Hillary Clinton elected. He needs a third term. And Hillary Clinton is highly motivated, because if she were anyone else but the leading Democratic Party candidate and former Secretary of State, she would be indicted by now for multiple crimes. Which brings me full circle as to why I started on the fictional book of Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. She set up a separate server. She can do that. What she can't do is receive secret documents, either send or receive, which she did. It's over 1,000 documents now. She has broken several federal statutes. She should be prosecuted. And we're talking stiff penalties here. And I have not gotten into the side issue, which is a big issue, of the fact that foreign governments, through a charitable foundation, were giving, again, contributions, charitable contributions, but they don't suddenly wake up in the morning and, oh, I got to give $1 million or whatever it is to the Clinton Charitable Foundation. They want something, folks. The Clintons are corrupt. They're criminals. They're liars. Nobody trusts her. It gets back to trust. She's selling out this country. And who backs her? George Soros backs her. As do the network of leftists in this country. Now, if you want all the details, remember, in about 5 minutes, I have to shut this show down. I probably will have a part two. I know I'm going to have a part two. But I want to see if I could get through as much as I could. You want more information? I'm going to highlight this. And there's a very, very short video. Now, it's called Discover the Networks. And the gentleman that set this up, it's a website, Discover the Networks. But at the very top, there's a YouTube video on it. And he gives you some information on it. But that's the place you need to go if you want to know who these leftists are. He has the names. He knows the history. Well, he used to be a leftist. He used to be at Berkeley. I happened to be in Berkeley when he was there. Never ran into him, but I was there. He knows what he's speaking about. And I'm not going to go into history, but his history, but I wanted to point that out. Go to his website. First, listen to, it's a short video called Discover the Networks. And then just browse through it.
There's a ton of information there, especially on George Soros, but all of these leftists. If you want to know what the left is doing, their background, and why they're dangerous, you need to go to Discover the Networks. And David Horowitz, again, at one time in the 70s, he was in the 60s and the 70s, was a man of the left. And his parent, he would describe himself, I believe, as a red diaper baby. In other words, the sons and daughters of former communists or socialists or Trotskyites. So he knows what he's speaking about. And he's written a book with Richard Poe called The Shadow Party, How George Soros, Hillary Clinton, and the 60s radicals seized control of the Democratic Party. Well, they did. I followed that. And that's one of the problems we have today. Both parties have moved further and further to the left. By far, the Democratic Party is a lost cause. And again, I think maybe 10 to 20% of the American people, they support this. The other 80% don't. That's why Democrats such as Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama have to lie. They know if they told the American people exactly what they were about and what they wanted to accomplish, the American people would say, absolutely not. Take a hike. They couldn't get elected dog catcher. But with the support of media and their propaganda, they succeeded in getting Barack Obama elected, and now they're trying to get Hillary Clinton elected. And besides guns, climate change is another area they emphasize because they want to ruin the country. And the way to ruin the country is make the cost of energy higher and higher. Again, that's being blocked by Congress. Another thing they want is open borders. And I've done many shows on immigration. But why do they want open borders? It's very easy to understand. They're for as many illegal immigrants that get in the country to ultimately become citizens because their long-range strategy, and they think long-term, folks, is every illegal alien here that's here as well as legally, they believe 2 out of 3, if not 3 out of 4, will eventually become legal Democratic registered voters. And if they're successful in doing that, they have single party rule for the next decade. The problem is the American worker has finally woken up to the fact that we're being screwed. We're being squeezed. Now, the irony is the Democratic Party makes a big thing about that, this, but they're the ones causing it. If you allow 30 to 50 million illegal aliens in this country, those are competitors, direct competitors with you in the labor force. And that's what the Democratic Party is all about. I mention this because if you want to understand why Donald Trump is succeeding, and most likely will be the next president, as well as why the Democratic elites in this country, as well as the Republican Party, are panicking, is they are for open borders. They are for higher and higher both legal and illegal immigration. Why? Because they're donors. They're big donors. That's what they want. And they are corrupted. They are bought and paid for. And they got to answer the demands of the donors, including George Soros. You need to understand what's going on. And it's in both parties, folks. That's why I've said many times, as long as we have a two-party tyranny, namely the Democratic and Republican Party in this country, nothing really is going to be made better. They are for the status quo, and what they are all about is staying in power and getting the money they need to run successful campaigns. And they know that money comes, I got to wrap it up, that money comes from the donor class. And one of the biggest donors on the left is George Soros. With that, I'll close out the show.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.